Great morning, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Thank God for Monday. I'm Brother Greg Cellini of the Franciscan Brothers of Brooklyn in the Office of Mission, Ministry, and Interfaith Dialogue at St. Francis College in beautiful Brooklyn, New York. My great pleasure to be back with you again today. The purpose of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to inspire you, our audience, to take personal responsibility for your professional satisfaction. We want to provide you hope, healing, and peace in these unprecedented, turbulent, uncertain times. Motivate you to search deep inside yourself in the quest for fulfillment. Listeners, it's really up to you as how to utilize the information we provide today. Take full accountability for the decisions you make and a resulting outcome. One of the goals of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to introduce role models of people who take very bold steps in their work lives. This is a very special time in our workplace when organizational collaboration has never been more important. And as such, we are honored today to have with us a very, very special guest. His name is Grayson James. Grayson has been helping executives, boards, and senior management teams improve their collaborative business performance for over 30 years. In addition, he facilitates organizational change initiatives and provides collaborative leadership education internationally through his consulting firm, Grayson James Consultants LLC, plus Full Contact Institute. Grayson designed and leads the highly acclaimed Full Contact Collaboration workshops worldwide across the globe. He is also a writer. He has authored a very enlightening and timely book entitled Full Contact Performance: The Internal Art of Organizational Collaboration. Great morning and welcome to Thank God for Monday, Grayson.
Good morning, Greg. Great to be with you.
The honor is all ours. Kindly share with the listeners and me from what city and state you are speaking from today.
I am in Petaluma, California, which is in Sonoma County, just about an hour north of San Francisco.
You have just made this host and the listeners very, very jealous. One of the most
Well,
beautiful
beautiful
places.
Sonoma County, speaking with beautiful Brooklyn.
Thank you so much, Grayson. We could spend hours talking about your amazing life, this incredible book you've written. We've only got 30 minutes. We're going to jump right into the deep end of the pool. One of the things that really caught my eye to this book is the subtitle, The Internal Art of Organization, All Collaboration. What does that mean, since collaboration is about the other people you have to collaborate with, isn't it? Share with us more about this subtitle, please.
Yeah, that's really the heart of the whole book and of my work. The as you said, when we think about collaboration, of course, it's about working with other people. That's what collaboration is. And the secret about collaboration is that while it's about other people, we have to work with ourselves in order to be able to engage most effectively with other people. And it shows up in a lot of ways. Generally, when we encounter problems or challenges working with people who may have really different backgrounds or skill sets or even goals than our own, and these days we're constantly thrust into situations where we do have to engage and work with people who are very different from us. And that's a great thing, but it can be challenging. When things get a little rocky, we tend to assume that the problem we have to solve is the problem of those people out there. I need to get them to be more collaborative. They are stonewalling. They don't understand. So all of my creative juices go towards trying to fix them, trying to get them to see things my way. And of course, you know, if we stop for a second and ask ourselves, well, how many of us like to be fixed? How many of us liked to be made to see things the other person's way because we're wrong and they're right? Not very many of us would raise our hands.
Sure.
So what this book really recognizes, and the way I think about things, is that we have to start with ourselves. We have to recognize that there are things that we're doing, ways that we're thinking, stories we are telling ourselves, and even ways that we are in our bodies, and ways that our nervous systems are habitually engaging with the people and the environment around us, that don't always work well for us, that actually can inhibit our own capacity to listen well, to be really present with folks who see things differently, and to find common ground. We are our greatest challenges, not our colleagues, in other words.
Wow, this is really fascinating. And I think you just answered a part of this next question, but I'd love for you to peel the onion some more if you have. How is your approach different from basic team building or even other approaches to collaborative performance?
Yeah, well, I think that, as I just said a moment ago, and as you acknowledge, we're bleeding into this question. The explicit focus is different. At least it starts out differently. So so many great approaches out there exist to collaboration and team building. The problem I found with them, because I grew up working with many of them, is that there are they only get us so far. As long as the focus remains on what I need to do out there, then I'm limiting myself. So I think that the biggest difference with my focus, it doesn't conflict with those other approaches, but it's more kind of the basic ground. My starting place is, how am I in this conversation? How am I in this collaboration? And what are the things that I'm doing, the ways that I'm thinking, the way I'm seeing things? How might those ways be actually inhibiting me from being able to apply all those great skills and principles of team building and collaboration that exist out there?
So if I perceive correctly, Grayson, as an author, as a consultant, you're holding up the mirror to people like Greg and saying, okay, how do you need to start with inside of yourself first before you, almost a plank splinter kind of thing, if you know, of course, you know, from the Bible, take the plank out of your own eye before the splinter out of someone else. This is really very fascinating and very, very much different, no question about it. Now, one of the other many things you talk about in the book, the role of attention in collaboration.
Yeah.
Explain much more what you mean by this role of attention in collaboration, please.
Well, let's say we're cleaning out our attic and going about our business, having a nice leisurely time, and all of a sudden we see a big spider. What happens to our nervous system? Our nervous system goes into overdrive, depending on our you know, very particular individual idiosyncratic reactions. Most of us will feel a jolt in our nervous system. Our attention focuses in almost exclusively to this spider, to this threat, and everything else recedes. The rest of the world disappears, at least for a moment.
Sure.
And then we kind of get our ground. We realize, oh, it's just a spider. What am I going to do with it? But in that moment, all of our attention has narrowed. We become tunnel vision on the threat. And this happens to us even with what we might otherwise consider to be really pretty mild social threats. Our nervous systems don't really know the difference very well. When we encounter somebody who's very different or who may be challenging my own thinking, for instance, it's easy for me to feel embarrassed or ashamed or fearful that I'm going to be revealed to be inadequate, to not know my thing, might not know my stuff. So my nervous system starts responding in a very similar way. And all of my attention gets focused on the perceived threat, which in the case of a social encounter is the other person or the situation that seems to be threatening me.
Wow.
So let's play that out. As long as that happens, as long as that's happening, I don't have all of my creative resources at my disposal because I am so hyper-focused on dealing with this threat, either avoiding it or pushing back against it, or some of us, we freeze up. And I need to learn to work with my nervous system because unless I can actually learn how to tolerate those kinds of encounters, which are really just encounters with diversity, encounters with differences, whether they're different perspectives, different ideas, different goals. The more I can tolerate that, the more my nervous system can remain calm, even, open. I don't have to be defensive. I can listen better. It's very hard to listen when I'm really freaked out and my nervous system is hyper aroused, very difficult to be present with people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's really pretty practical and it's pretty, it's physiological. And there are a lot of ways that we can work with our nervous systems in any situation, whether you're a CEO of a multinational corporation or a junior in college or somebody who's just out of college in a job interview. Managing our nervous system is a really powerful way that we can be more effective in almost any situation.
Wow, this is amazing. And I loved everything you said, but in particular what caught my ears and heart when you mentioned about people thinking differently, acting maybe differently, because with today's wonderful emphasis on diversity, equity, inclusion, more than 20, 30, 50 years ago, people now in the workplace are indeed running into all different types of people, all different types of theories and inputs and things of that nature. So what you're saying and what you're promulgating really has an incredible amount of applicability now more than ever. Is that correct? Because people are not thinking homogeneous.
Yeah, that's how I see it, Greg. I see that the people in the workforce in companies today are getting to, it depends on your perspective. We have to be around people that we would never even imagine having had to work with, 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Sure.
And that's a great thing as long as we actually know how to engage with these people and work with the differences. And that's the challenge. That's really what we struggle with is how do I really learn how to be with this person, to be open, to learn from them, and to figure out how we can achieve what we're trying to achieve and get all of our needs met when those needs might be kind of different for all of us.
Wow. Oh, absolutely. Thank God for you, Grace, and thank God for this book. It's come out just in time. There's no question about that. Now, you also mentioned, I think you've talked a little bit about this, but again, I want to peel the onion some more. You mentioned that the body plays an important part in the collaborative performance. It doesn't sound to me you're referring to body language, but you might be, but it sounds like you're talking about other things. Share with us all about the body, please, Grace.
Yeah, I you're absolutely right. I'm really not talking so much about body language, although there's certainly an element of that, but the way I am in my body has a lot to do with the way I perceive the world, the way I think, and consequently, the way I can engage with people and the environment around me. So when, for instance, if I have my breath is high up and shallow in my chest, that produces a state of my nervous system that is very different than when I'm breathing slow, deeply in my belly. The nervous system is in a different state of tonicity. And as I was just saying a minute ago, that produces really, we're like living in different worlds. When I'm breathing high and shallow, I'm living in a different world than when I'm very relaxed and at ease. And you're going to pick up on that. And if I'm a leader, or if I'm in a job interview, And I am really worked up because I've been telling myself whatever internal stories I'm telling myself about how much I need this job, how if I don't get this job, whatever, or I'm not the right person for it, I may not be what they're really looking for. That, of course, communicates. It doesn't always communicate directly or verbally, but people pick up on those cues. So, you know, as soon as you and I logged into this call, we were already, consciously or not, picking up on each other's cues. And our conversation is this, expresses this, you know, really beautiful interplay. Often, much of it is unconscious, subconscious. This interplay of between our nervous systems, we're picking up our tone of voice, the other person's way of being. And, you know, when you're live in the room together, that there's even more of that to pick up on. So the body is an important area, both of learning and also of self-cultivation. If I learn how to breathe more slowly, to modulate my voice, it's going to affect my emotional state. And that's going to affect your emotional state. We have these, I call it the principle of reciprocity. You know, our nervous systems are so finely attuned to one another. We're constantly reacting and often mirroring each other without even realizing it.
Boy, this is just fascinating. And I couldn't help think, I spent many years in our college's Center for Career Exploration. And one of the things, and even in 29 years of big pharmaceuticals before becoming a brother, we used to talk about a negative self-talk when going to an interview. And if you fill yourself with all that negative self-talk, it's going to impact your body, as you say, your nervous system, et cetera, and you're going to probably come off flat as a pancake instead of being the confident person that you could be or should be in that kind of a way. So this is
That's really well said, Greg. Yeah, absolutely. Our conversations aren't just cerebral exchanges. They always happen in a body. We speak from a body. We listen in a body. We interact with people in our bodies. And that's an important part of the equation, but it's often not recognized.
Wow, that's amazing, certainly. Now, one of the things I love in this book here, throughout the book, you talk about promises. Can you explain why promises matter so much for the collaborative performance? And what do you even mean by promises, please, Grace?
Sure, yeah, it's a good question. And it's one of my favorite themes. So when we're getting things done with people, particularly in organizations, it's probably the easiest to see. When we talk about execution, which is where the action really seems to be in organizations, we need to execute, we need to make things happen together. The way I think about execution is it's promises. We make promises to one another. And we could say that our role in our organizations, whatever the role is, again, from CEO to a person working in the mailroom, we're paid to make and keep certain kinds of promises. The promises that I make if I'm working in the mailroom are going to be different than the promises that you might make as CEO. But we still make promises, and there's a promisor. We're the promisor for many of our promises. And we're also the customer for those promises that other people make to us. Wow. Now, here's why I think that's important. We often assume that work gets done because there are goals, there are objectives, there are strategies, and there are people in roles and job descriptions. And we assume that it's those job descriptions or those roles that get things done. But roles are just words on a piece of paper or on a web page. The job descriptions are inert. There's no commitment in job descriptions. And this is why I like to use the word promises, because it reminds us that promises are about human beings. Promises can only be made from a human being to another human being.
Oh, wow.
And it all hinges on the commitments that we're making to one another. And that's why I use the word promise so much when I'm working with teams, helping them to improve their execution.
Wow, this is so fascinating because I do a lot of speaking with freshmen, and freshmen find it naturally in college, the jump from high school to that first semester in college is sometimes very rigorous.
Yes.
And it's jumping up a long learning curve. And one of the things that they share with me is that sometimes they'll overpromise and underdeliver. And I have to remind them sometimes that it's okay to say no, that by saying no, you can protect the commitment or the promises that you've made to others, because invariably they can't do everything. I know myself, I can't do everything. And sometimes the no. Have you found that in all your extensive work, your great diverse background, Grayson, that no can be a powerful word?
Oh my God, yes, Gregory. It is so important. So we could be having what you just said you share with the freshmen. You could be saying to many senior leadership teams in companies around the world, because that's what I do.
What? Wow.
People struggle with the same things. They take on too many, they make too many promises that they can't always keep. And we suffer when we do that. We get anxious, we get stressed out. When we do fail to keep our promises, of course, it affects our public identity, our reputation, the trust that people have in ourselves. But more importantly, it affects the trust and confidence we have in ourselves. When we experience ourselves constantly not keeping our promises, we're aware of that as well as the people around us are aware of it, and we suffer. So I'm always reminding executives that no can be a gift, not only to myself. When I say no to a request, if somebody asks me to do something, and when I'm saying no, I'm not being disrespectful or rude or selfish. It could be the opposite. I'm saying yes to other things that might be equally or more important or doable. So sometimes if you ask me to do something and I say yes, but I don't really think I can do it, is that a good thing? Am I actually being respectful to you? I would say no. I would say actually that can be quite disrespectful, even irresponsible. In some cases, it's even criminal when you say yes and you mean no. Right now, very few of us enter into that territory, but just to make the point, no, saying no, I'm not going to be able to do this, Gregory, that can let you get on with your life and go to ask somebody else to help you with that. Because if I say yes, and then you're counting on me, then I'm affecting your life, not just my own. So sometimes, yes, I say this in the book, sometimes yes is a curse and no is a gift.
Wow.
So I think no is just a deeply undervalued move that we can make collaboratively and in our lives. And it can bring a lot more peace.
Well, you got that, Ron. I learned that the hard way in Big Pharma. One day, one of my colleagues said, under-promise, over-deliver versus over-promise. Yeah. Under-deliver. And I think you hit the nail on the head. We have a wonderful wellness center at St. Francis College where I met. And they talk a lot about vulnerability, that, you know what, we have to ask for help. We can't do it all ourselves. And there's no shame in being vulnerable and asking for help. Well, this is amazing. We could talk all day, Grace. And sorry to say, we've only got about 6 minutes, believe it or not. I've got some important questions still to ask you. If I perceive correctly, there's not one conversation of collaborative performance or two, but there's actually three conversations of collaborative performance. Share with us a little bit about these, please. And do they all need to happen in order for collaboration to go well?
Yeah, good question. Well, there are actually quite a few more conversations that we can have, but I've really highlighted the three that are pretty much always present in most collaborative encounters. They are the learning conversation, the design conversation, and the fulfillment conversation. The design conversation is the kind of conversation we have when we want or need to expand our thinking, to see things we're not currently able to see, to get beyond the blind spots that we all have, unavoidable. We're all mostly blind and actually really have access to the world in pretty limited areas. It doesn't feel that way to us, of course, but we are. And this is why learning is so important. In today's organizations, there is just so much more information available that it's impossible for any one person to be able to navigate things in any kind of a meaningful way without help. And so when we're talking about a learning conversation, we're talking about how do we engage with one another so that we can really come away from the conversation seeing things, understanding things, thinking things that we weren't able to see, think, or understand before the conversation. Wow. That's really the learning conversation. And it involves a lot of listening. There's a certain kind, you know, certain moods that are show up more in learning conversations that are different than say the fulfillment conversation, which is all about promises.
Wow.
So the design conversation, you can think of it as we go from learning to designing. And the design conversation is where we do things like make decisions. We say, okay, based on what we've learned, we're going to focus our research and development budget on X, Y, and Z in the next year. Or we're going to use these metrics to determine how successful we are at engaging with our customers. Those are the kinds of things we do. We design the future in the design conversation. We design our goals, our objectives, our strategies, our decisions. We even design problems. What are the problems we're going to choose to focus on in this next quarter? What are the solutions we think are most likely to address those problems? That's all what happens in the design conversation. And then once we've learned together so we can think, we can make better decisions, we can design better goals because of the learning we've done. Sure. Now we get into the fulfillment conversation. This is where we execute. This is where we make promises to each other.
Oh.
Okay, hey, Gregory, look at this is my sweet spot. So I'm going to make this promise to you. I'm going to research this market, and I'm going to get back to you with my thoughts about how we can best go about tapping into that market or whatever it might be. That's just, you know, an example, but it's where we make and we manage promises to each other. And that's where we get stuff done. That's how we create successful teams and companies and meet customers' satisfaction is in the fulfillment conversation. So I presented the three conversations as if they always flow in the direction of first we learn, then we design, then we fulfill. But no, we're often cycling all through these conversations. Even in a given conversation, we can go back and forth between these many times. The main point is to know what conversation we're in when we're in it.
Oh, wow.
Here's why. Because you and I can be deep into a fulfillment conversation trying to negotiate a promise that we're going to make to one another, a promise that I'm going to make to you or you're going to make to me. But we may not realize that we haven't really fully defined the problem we're trying to solve. Or the goal may not, we may think we have a shared goal, but we may not because we really haven't talked it through clearly enough.
Oh, wow.
So we could just bang our heads against the wall trying to arrive at a solid promise, but we'll never be satisfied. And the reason is often because we haven't taken the time to have the conversations that we need to before we get to this point. So having awareness of what we're actually doing in real time, what is the conversation you and I are having right now, that's going to really allow us to move so much more quickly later on.
Oh, makes perfect sense. No doubt about it. Grayson, we've saved the most important question for last. From where can our loyal listeners purchase Full Contact Performance? How can they best follow you, please?
Well, Full Contact Performance is now available pretty much at any bookseller. So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, yeah, local booksellers can order it. So it's out there. And Full Contact Institute is the name of the consulting firm that I work with. And we can be reached at Full Contact Institute or Grayson@FullContactInstitute.com. And I welcome folks reaching out to us.
Listeners, let's keep the conversation going with Grayson. And there's no excuse. This book, this fabulous book, Full Contact Performance, is all over the place. So you can pick it up anywhere. Certainly, it's the holiday season. This makes a tremendous gift. Please, please, please pick up one for yourself. Give this to some others as gifts. Those in the corporate world, those in the nonprofit world, those in the education world, it doesn't matter where they are. This book is so helpful in enhancing organization collaboration internally. As it says in the subtitle, the internal art of organizational collaboration. Our workplace will be so much better in 2024. You reading this, you giving this as a gift for people to read for the new year. Grayson James, we can't thank you enough for coming on Thank God for Monday today. We've been enlightened. We've been very, very inspired. Continued success, joy, happiness, and wonderful, wonderful contribution in all this fabulous work you're literally doing around the world.
Thanks so much, Gregory. Really good to be with you. I appreciate the wonderful questions.
Oh, the honor is all ours. Listeners, guess what? Once again, we're out of time. Greg saying our hope and prayer is that when you wake up on Monday morning, just like Grayson does, you'll say, thank God for Monday. Until next week's episode, have a great week, everyone. Bye-bye.